evening, Northern Colorado. This is KD0TYU, Net Control for this evening. Tech Dance, sponsored by the Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club. Looking for check-ins, check-ins, check-ins. Anybody want to check in, please call.
This is Kilo Delta Zero, Tango Bravo Bravo.
Kilo Delta Zero, TBB. Forgot the name. Is it Ken?
Roger, my mistake. Yeah, this is Ken in Loveland. I do have a question, if I may bring it up.
Yeah, let me go ahead and take some check-ins, Ken, and then I will ask you first if you have for your question. And I would just as soon do it, before we get into our subject matter, for sure. Would you mind?
No, that works fine.
Thank you very much. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Hey, Joe, here's Kilo India Zero, Kilo November, James in Loveland. And I'll be back and forth from the mic for just a couple of minutes, and then I'll be on solid for the rest of the night. Good evening.
Good evening. Oh, by the way, just for your own information, I signed up for your CQ2K.com. I signed up for that, and I totally understand why it's easier to do this.
Well, that's great. You know, like I said, learning CW is how you learn it is a very personalized experience, and certain things work better for others. But that was the course that finally launched me into being proficient. So I'm glad you like it, and hope you do well with it.
Well, I'm just on Kangaroo, but I've got that part.
Yeah. Well, you're flying right along. You're halfway through, so good job.
I think that's only the fourth letter. Okay. Well, everybody knows what tonight's subject is, but first of all, we have a question from Ken. KD0TBB.
Okay, thank you. I was over at Kevin's today, and I was looking at his battery supply for a portable unit, and I'm trying to figure out how big a battery I need to run a portable unit. It's an ST100D by Yaesu, and it's supposed to be a formula for converting amp hours to watts to whatever. Can anybody help me out with that?
N0WIQ.
N0WIQ, go ahead.
Well, the amp hours are basically how long the battery will deliver a charge amps for a given period of time. And the watts are the 12 volts times the current that you're drawing is the power that you're drawing. So it's one of those things. So if you look at your radio manual, it'll tell you how much power it's able to put out. But if I remember correctly, that may be a 100-watt radio. So it'd probably be 20 amps out of your battery, so 20 amps is 20 times the amps for the hour reading. So that's all I'll say for now.
Thank you for that, Kerry.
Yeah, zero, Ken.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so the way I do this is, Terry's on the right track there to start with. You got to figure out what your radio draws current-wise, how much it draws in receive, and how much it draws in transmit. So both of those should probably be, both of those current in numbers should be listed in your manual. And then you got to pick a time ratio of transmit to receive. So, for example, I conservatively usually use 20% transmit, 80% receive. In reality, it's more often a whole lot like 95 and 5. But start with that. Let me reset here. And then what you do is you take, you pick the amount of time you want to run on battery. So say you got 10 hours, you want to run on battery. Well, if you're transmitting 20% of the time and receiving 80% of the time, you take the transmit current that is listed in your manual times 2 hours, because that's 20% of the 10 hours, and the receive current times 8 hours, 80% of the time, add those two numbers up, and that will tell you how many amp hours of battery you need to run that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
So that's kind of just a rough estimate. Now, the other thing, we could talk about batteries for a million years, but just understand that whatever a battery says on it for amp hours, that doesn't mean it will deliver that under all conditions. Those are under certain discharge conditions. So, you know, if you just get something a little bigger than the number you calculate, you'll be in good shape. That's just kind of a general rule of thumb without getting too deep in it. So I will turn that back to Joe if anybody else wants to comment. KI0CAN.
Radio Mike. Radio Mike, not familiar with that. Sorry, I think I got the transmit button too late. This is Kilo Oscar 6 Radio Mike. Just wanted to add two comments to that. When we're looking at capacity, we also want to make sure the battery, that we don't, if we're looking at, say, 35 amp hours, depending on the battery chemistry, we only want to discharge the battery safely about 50%. And certain other batteries will do a little better. You can discharge them more like 80%. But if you only calculate all, if you use the entire amount of that chemistry, you can really kill your battery really quick. So that's one thing on capacity. Also on the amp, on the current draw, I would highly recommend spending $40 or $50 on a nice meter that'll plug it in line with the power pole. Because I find on my 100-watt rig with sideband, I only pull 10 or 12 amps where the manual will say 20. Thanks, Joe. This is Jeremy, Kilo Oscar 6 Radio Mike.
Yeah, 0 can.
Go ahead, James.
Yeah, that last station is dead on the money. That is a very, very important factor I forgot to mention on round one. Is exactly that. You whatever amp hours you, by the way, the number of amps that you totaled up in that formula also needs to be divided by 10 to get the amp hours. You do not want to discharge the battery, and he's right, it varies by chemistry, but if you shoot for 60%, you'll be pretty safe with any chemistry. Don't discharge anything below 60%. The only exception to that is flooded, like car starting batteries, which you don't want to discharge more than about 10%. So you do need amp hours 40% greater than what you calculated out. Reset, and one more comment. You didn't be sorry you asked me to join this, Joe. I'm chatty tonight. the other comment he made was a power meter. If you search on Amazon for 12-volt power meter, you'll find many manufacturers. They all look exactly the same except for the different Chinese name on the front. There is a very nice little meter that's about, you can fit it in the fist of your palm, fit it in the palm of your hand, I should say, that has just got about 4-inch flying leads on each end. You can put a power pole on that. They're about $18-$20 on Amazon. Turnigy is one brand, Turnigy. They're sold for model aircraft use mostly. Beautiful power meters. They will give you instantaneous voltage and current, and they will track the amount of power, including in watts and amp hours every other unit you can imagine as it comes out or goes into the battery. So, phenomenal meter for $20. Back to you, Joel. KI0KN.
Well, you guys, next week our subject is going to be batteries, but we've covered a lot of this, and we'll kind of move along next week. And discuss it more, unless there's any other questions. Ken, did that help you any?
Yes, it did, Joe. And thanks to the group. There's a lot of wisdom here, and I always appreciate the answers I get.
We thank you very much for joining in. It's Katie's at TYU Net Control for this evening's TechNet, sponsored by the Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club. I guess I've got a question for whoever wants to answer when you're dealing with wattage. As Carrie has mentioned, that you've got a 50-watt radio, but you're not actually putting, I guess James mentioned this too, you're not actually putting out 50 watts because the percentage-wise, you know, you could have 30, 35. When you do your calculations, do you enter in what it actually puts out or what the written thing? In other words, do you look at the 35 watts or do you look at 50 watts, what the radio should be putting out?
Yeah, zero, Ken.
Go right ahead, sir.
You're comparing two uncomparable units there. The watts that a radio is, for example, a 50-watt radio, that is the RF power out the connector, out the antenna connector. And it is, although it is usually fairly linearly related to the current draw of the power connector in, you can't just do a one-to-one. If you want to know watts in, you got to take the current draw in, you know, and then multiply it by the voltage. But 50 watts of RF out does not mean, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. You typically are drawing, a 100-watt radio typically draws around 22 amps. So 50 watts is going to draw about 12 and a half amps. And then as you step it down, you know, you're going to do that. So when you make your calculations, that first number is based on full power, but you got to calculate it all out. You can't just you can ignore the 50 watts. That's just an RF power level. Does that make sense, Joe? So yeah, you know, at high power you're going to be putting out 50 watts and drawing 12 amps. At 25 watts you're going to be drawing roughly, you know, 7 amps. You know, and at 12 watts you're going to be drawing roughly 3 amps, etc.
Okay, copy that. There's no relationship between RF power and there's no relationship between that and actual draw.
Is there a WIQ?
Go ahead, Kerry.
My experience watching these amateur radios, they typically set up for twice as much power in as in the RF power output, and that's because the power amplifier is typically only 50% efficient. So if you got a 50-watt output, you need 100 watts in, and 100 watts at 12 volts is just short of 10 amps.
Okay, that makes sense.
And Joe, the statement that you made earlier wasn't quite correct. When you said there is no relationship to the watts out to the current in, there's actually a direct relationship to that. It's just that you can't, the numbers are different units of measure. So there is a direct relationship, but you can't say, you know, for 50 watts out, you don't put 50 watts in. Just as Carrie mentioned, the efficiency of the power amplifier and the electronics and the heat losses and whatnot, you're always going to have to put far more DC power in to get the same RF amount out.
Okay, and that would be a direct relationship. And the only way you can really do it is by putting a meter on, is what you're saying, correct?
the most accurate way, and that's probably the only way for a lot of radios that you'll find out what the current draw is on something less than high power. Some manuals list it, but oftentimes they only list the current draw at high power, and the meter will tell you what it is at medium and low, or mid one, mid two, whatever you got. And as Kerry mentioned earlier, he's also correct in that oftentimes you'll find the radio doesn't quite draw exactly what they say it will require at max power. It's usually a little less. Meter is the best answer, and for 18 or 20 bucks, you just can't go wrong to have something there that'll tell you exactly the right data.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Any other questions or comments on this subject? Okay, let's move on to our subject tonight, which is how actual repeaters work, this magic box that we're talking in now. I'm going to start out with, N0WIQ. Kerry, do you have any comments about this?
Well, Joe and your group, I would call my comments repeater 101. And the situation is that if you get a low enough signal or a signal that barely trips the repeater, it'll turn on the transmitter. But if it has to have a tone, it takes a little more power to have the tone be decoded and put the modulation through. So that's basically the situation I find. We got the repeater anti-interruption for the most part, so if you hear the repeater carrier come up and no audio, it's possibly because somebody isn't getting enough power to the repeater.
Thank you so much for that, Kerry. Mark, I know I saw your email, but would you like to comment on this, W2MIC?
W2MIC. Oh, I'm afraid that what little I know about repeaters, I have learned from watching James's presentations at the NCARC monthly meetings recently. As far as I'm concerned, they are big magic boxes up on the hill that let me talk to people far, far away using very little power out of my handheld. And with that, I yield the floor to James.
KI0KN, looks like you have the floor, and I thank you for joining us.
All right, you bet, Joe. Well, here's what I want to start with before we get into any actual theory or questions. I'd like to basically define what the repeater is and help remove some of the magic. a repeater is really, in its most basic form, nothing more than a receiver and a transmitter. And in all sense of the way, the receiver, when it receives the proper amount of everything, signal and tone and all that good stuff, it will pass the signal over to the transmitter, which transmits the signal at the same time. And it is called, what a repeater does is what's called half duplex, because this signal coming in and going out are happening in one direction only, but at the same time, versus like a telephone, which is full duplex. So your cell phone, you can talk and listen both at the same time. You may not understand what's going on with all that chatter, but the signals travel in both directions all the time, whereas a repeater, half duplex, receive and transmit at the same time, but only one direction at a time. Let me break here. Now, the thing that makes the repeater special and a little bit different than, for example, your crossband mobile or anything else are two things. Number one, the fact that it's up very high, typically, or on a high structure, and it uses very low-loss parts, low-loss coax or hardline, high-gain, low-loss antennas, things like that, and sometimes receive preamplifiers, all these little tricks and stuff to make it a very sensitive receiver, and then typically a power amplifier to make it a very powerful transmitter. Combine all that with a very high location, and that is why the repeater performs the way it does and as well as it does. break one more time here. Now, the only magical signals that come that are a little different on a repeater and its controller, rather than, you know, like your crossband mobile, is that the receiver is nothing more than a receiver. It outputs essentially, typically, three signals. It outputs the audio that it heard, so just as if it were something connected to the speaker. But it also outputs two other signals. One is called COR or COS, and that is carrier-operated relay or carrier-operated squelch. It's the same signal, it's just called two different things depending on the manufacturer. Essentially, what it is a logic level, 0 to 5 volts typically, of when the squelch is open. So it does the same thing to your radio. It's an output signal of what your squelch knob does. When the squelch is open, it's hearing a signal. It says, "Help! I hear a signal. I put 5 volts on my COR pin." Oh, okay, the signal's gone and it's quiet and the squelch is closed. I take my 5 volts away and put 0 volts on that. That is one of the two signals that controller uses to know it should or shouldn't be repeating. The other signal is the signal that comes out of the CTCSS tone decoder, which can be an external thing or it can be a built into the repeater thing. It's the same kind of thing. If the proper tone is present, you are transmitting the proper tone, like 100 hertz in this case, then that signal goes high and tells the controller, yes, I have the proper tone, or no, I don't have the proper tone. So with those three signals coming in, the repeater controller basically determines whether or not it should repeat the signal and how it should repeat the signal. Lastly, after the controller has those pieces of information and has determined that it should or shouldn't repeat the signal, if everything is good and it says yes, then what it does is it brings up a push-to-talk line on its output, the controller's output, which keys the transmitter, and it passes that audio signal through. And then typically the CTCSS is regenerated by the transmitter, just like it would be in a mobile. And that is in of itself the most basic description of what a repeater is. Now, if anybody wants to get into the dirty details of it, we can talk about circulators and interference panels and front-end filters and all that good stuff. But let me stop there and see if there's any questions.
K0CWM, question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Say, with the machine, the way it is right now, repeater, there's quite a lengthy squelch tail, which sets up the situation where folks a little bit quick on the key tend to easily time out the machine. This may have been well addressed. I haven't been listening to Tech Night too much, but is that something that you could answer?
Yes, absolutely. I'm actually really glad you brought that up because this is a subject that I don't think is understood very well. First of all, this particular repeater, because there's a programming problem with it. That timeout timer, there are two timeout timers in a repeater system. There can be. In our case, there is. The controller has a timeout timer, and it is the thing that says, okay, signal's been on my input too long. I'm gonna unkey the transmitter and wait for a reset. Now, we do have that, and that's the timer that will remain set. The timer that you're talking about happens to be built into the actual Kenwood repeater hardware we have. And it's a timeout timer that protects the actual transmitter. It's actually not supposed to be set anywhere. anywhere near as short as it is, or sometimes even at all, depending on the situation, because until this recent project, we've not had any way of remotely shutting things down. The timeout timers were backed down, I believe, to shorter values just in case things got hung up. Now, that being said, that's going to change. Very soon that will be gone and that timeout problem won't exist. Now, that being said, let me address what the timeout and the tail is for. This is where things get a little bit different, I think, or misunderstood. The reason that we have a timeout tail, or not a timeout, but a squelch, not a squelch tail, a tail, the repeater tail, it's the silence after the courtesy beep, but before the repeater unkeys. The courtesy beep is there to let you know that the other side unkeyed. And the reason the repeater stays keyed is so that people can go back and forth and have a conversation without the annoying kerchunk that the repeater makes when it unkeys, the squelch crash. In a normal and a well-adjusted system, the transmitter on the repeater never shuts off during the whole QSO, back and forth, back and forth. And it's a much more pleasant way of having the conversation. Now, ours, of course, everyone's getting used to them being timed wrong and the repeater times out, so everybody waits not only for the courtesy tone, but then the repeater to drop out. Normally, you wouldn't have to do that. That will be fixed shortly. But the reason it's there is just to avoid that crash by the repeater unkeying so that the conversation goes back and forth. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir, and thank you very much. That's great stuff. And no criticism, just an observation. Yeah, and I get it. It's much more pleasant than the kerchunk right in the middle of things. But I've just noticed myself being a bucket mouth, that quick on the key and not letting the machine reset and timing the thing out. So anyway, excellent explanation. Thank you very much. That's all I got. KE0CWM.
M0WIQ with a question.
Okay, Gary, hold on 1 second. Let me just address that last thing with Jay there. One thing I do want to let you know is that once I remove that transmitter timeout, the only timeout that will remain is the controller timeout. One thing I want to make clear to everybody, the courtesy tone is the indicator that that timeout has been reset. So once I get up there and get this timeout timer fixed, the real and only remaining timeout timer will reset every time you hear the courtesy tone. So that'll be the reset from that point. So hopefully that clarifies that a little. M0WIQ, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, you're describing a situation where the transmitter of the repeater will be 100% busy. And I know that not all repeaters have a capability with the power output, so sometimes you might run into that confusion factor also. But I believe you have said that this repeater's power output is 100% capable.
And that's a very good point, Kerry. The most amateur gear is not made for anywhere near 100% duty cycle. But that is actually why we keep the power on the repeaters turned down, and we use a power amplifier, and we run all of that well within its design of 100% duty cycle envelope, and that way everything stays cool, and the transmitter, technically the transmitter, the way we've got everything set up on the mountain right now, these transmitters could stay keyed 24/7. And never damage anything. They are designed to be hot all the time, or transmitting all the time. So any time they get a break at all, is just a bonus for them. KI0KN. So hopefully that answered those. Is there any other questions there?
Well, Jay, hey, that's quite interesting. The thing could stay hot, broadcast continuously. That's some good equipment. So anyway, that's interesting to know. Anyway, thank you very much, K0CWM.
All right, well, Joe, I guess back to you, KI0KN. Thanks for letting me steal the floor for a while there.
K0, Echo Lima Kilo. I got one more question for James associated with the tones. I don't know if everyone understands the purpose of those tones, the CTSS that we use, and why we use them, and exactly how they get involved, and what happens if you don't have it set properly. Over.
Yeah, you bet. Tom, that's a fantastic question also. So the first thing we should discuss is what CTCSS stands for, and that is Continuous Tone Coded Squelch System. It's one of two major tone system, or one of two major squelch systems in use. The other one is typically called DCS, or Digital Coded Squelch. And what CTCSS is a sub-audible tone, hence the 100 hertz, the 104 hertz, 107 hertz, whatever the tone may be on the repeater. It's something below the normal audio path so that you are not supposed to hear it. If everything's adjusted right, you won't hear it. And its purpose is to help validate that the signal coming into the repeater is a good one that should be repeated. So without tone, you may have heard the term carrier squelch. And what that means is the squelch will only open upon a signal of any kind at all on the input. And what tone does is it says, I have to have a signal that opens my squelch and this special tone, and I know it's a good signal. It's an interference reduction method. Let me break. So what it does is it keeps a lot of the stuff down, you know, keeps all the interference and intermod and things like that to a minimum that may, where, you know, on a busy repeater site, there may be little blips and beeps of intermixed signal that happen to land on your receiver frequency or the repeater's receiver frequency. And when that happens, the repeater would normally open it up and just repeat that little blurt. So that tone system is what helps protect that. The tone system exists on both sides, or can exist on both sides. Our repeaters all require the tone in, so you have to put tone in code, or and so that means you're transmitting the 100 hertz to open up our receiver. It's your choice whether you would like to require the receiving of the tone on the way back down. So you can run tone encode up, carrier squelch down, or you can run tone encode up and tone encode down. Does that make sense there, Tom?
Sure does. I appreciate that. I get that question all the time. I thought in general most people would like to hear about this, so that's really good information.
Yeah, it's an excellent point and an excellent question to answer, because it's also one of those fairly, we all know we need it. A lot of people don't know why we have it. But put your mobile radio on some 440 channel, put it on carrier squelch, and drive around a busy city somewhere and listen to how many times your squelch breaks and the radio makes squawks and beeps and all that stuff. That's exactly why tone squelch, it was implemented in our ham world, was exactly to help hide that. Interestingly, that is not why tone squelch was invented in the first place. It was invented as a mute function for party line, essentially.
Great information. This is KE0 Echo Lima Kilo. Thanks.
K0CWM, come with questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I typically leave my receive set at 88.5, and it'll just pick up. So I want you to kind of clarify this for me. If you put the tone out back to my radio in there, does that stop, help some of the help stop some of the interference?
Yes. If you require tone on your receive side, so it's typically the TSQL or tone squelch mode, and you set it to the proper tone for the repeater, your radio squelch will not open regardless of what the receiver hears unless it hears that proper tone. So it will stop many, many, many of those beeps and squawks and all that good stuff.
All right, cool. It looks like I got some programming to redo.
KU0CWM.
Day or three, because this repeater's tone squelch is going to move back to 100 hertz in the next couple of days. So it'll be both listening for 100 and putting out 100. As of today, it's the only repeater left that's split tone. It's putting out 110, and that's going to change. So give it a couple days, but everything else is ready to go now. You can require 100, and all will be good. And with that, Joe, I am pulling into my destination in Firestone. I will be away from the radio for just a couple of minutes. I will rejoin the net as soon as I'm back in the vehicle. KI0CAN. I'll let some other people have a turn.
N0WIQ, I think I will escape this net. So have a good evening, everybody.
W2MIC.
Thank you, Kerry. W2MIC, go ahead, Mark.
KI0KN is quite an act to follow, but I can add a little tiny bit. One of the reasons for repeater output tones comes up in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is fundamentally an immense valley surrounded by a rim of mountains. And there are a gazillion people out there and a gazillion repeaters. There are so many repeaters in that area that some repeaters reuse the same frequency pair. That's not a problem we have here in northern Colorado. So in the Bay Area, it is critically important to have your repeater output tone set and recognized by your radio, because there will be repeater A, which has, let us say, 100 hertz in and 100 hertz out, and repeater B on the exact same frequency pair, which is going to use a different set of CTCSS tones, let's say 109 and 109, so that you are talking to one A and listening to that one A and not hearing the input and the output of B. That's kind of an esoteric situation, but in the super crowded areas, it's very real. It's not a problem we have here.
KU0CWM, when I can I jump in there with a question / comment, Mark?
Go ahead, Jay.
Thanks, Joe. Hey, yeah, sorry to interrupt. I believe this is correct. In business band and, let's say, some government use of repeaters, the hook you hang your mic up on would have a function that when it's on the hook, the received tone will not... your squelch will not break while that's on the hook unless you have the right receive tone. And that is because there is a lot of activity and usage on that same repeater and that so forth. So therefore, you're not bothered by everybody else's business until somebody that's got the same, you have the right receive tone for you, unless you are supposed to, or somebody's directing a message towards you. Does that make any sense, Mark?
W2MIC. Sure. Amateur radios, like the one I'm talking on, will allow you to require a CTCSS tone on simplex. And that means that if you, Jay, are talking to me on simplex frequency, so not via a repeater, I can set my radio to only break squelch if and only if you, Jay, are transmitting a CTCSS tone of, let us say, 100 hertz. The general idea here, as Jay says, comes from the business bands where many people are in using simplex on the same frequency, but each group of people only wants to hear their own group, not the chatter from everybody else. This works fairly well, except if group A is using, let us say, 100 hertz, and group B is using 88 hertz, if group A is transmitting, group B can't talk because somebody else is already on the channel. So there's a lot of issue with collisions and dropouts and doubling and interference. Generally speaking, it's not a good idea to run simplex with CTCSS tones and both on transmit and receive, but it can be done.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Mark. Yeah, on those old King radios, we had the hook had a wire to it that when the mic was on the hook, then it would activate your receive tone. You're requiring that receive tone. When you're off the hook, you would hear anybody that's on the horn, but while you're on the hook, then you only receive folks that are transmitting your received tone. So anyway, that's just my experience observation. Thanks, Mark. W2MIC KE0CWM.
I have a question for anybody on the net. I don't know if Mark, you can answer this or whatever. About the tones. As you know, Budweiser right now is a Fusion digital repeater, along with the Wars repeater, which is definitely a Fusion repeater. And we get some noise when there's a digital signal coming in. Someone told me that if you set the receiver tone on your radio, it will eliminate that digital sound. Does anybody know if that's true or not?
GES.
Go ahead.
I know Budweiser is set up that way, yes, what it means is that the repeater doesn't send out any CTCSS tone when it's transmitting digital signals, or it sends out a different CTCSS, I'm not sure which. But if you set the 100 hertz or whatever it requires on your receiver, you'll only get that tone when it's sending analog and you won't hear all that noise. N7GES. I have yet to do that.
Yes, I knew that. No, for digital there is no tone. I'm sure of that. I'm pretty sure of that. But someone did tell me all you'd have to do is set the receiver tone to whatever the frequency, other than turning it off. Now, that's the thing that we've been telling everybody for years. You don't need the receiver tone because you just don't need it. So we turn it off on the Bofangs. We do it on the Kenwoods, all this and that. But we've run into some problems, both with the Budweiser receiver from a couple of different people and definitely with the Wars repeater. Someone told me if you just set the tone, the receiver tone, then that would eliminate that signal from the digital side.
Yeah, that is correct, and that is one time where locally we would definitely benefit from using it. N7GES.
Any other questions?
W2MIC.
Go right ahead, my friend. W2MIC, you have the floor.
This one harks back to the radio frequency interference discussion of a previous TechNet and was brought up just briefly this evening. If you are driving around or walking around and there is a RFI situation on your band, And you do not have your radio set to require output tones from the repeater, your radio will break squelch and you will get a huge from the local interference source. If you do have your radio set, your radio, to require the output tone from the repeater, that local RFI will not break your squelch and blow your eardrums out. The bad news is that if there is that much RFI locally and someone is transmitting through the repeater with the required output tone, that output tone will open your squelch, but you probably will not be able to hear the audible signal from the person coming through the repeater because the high local RFI source will blot it out. I've experienced this in particular various places in Loveland, and my strong opinion is that I want to have my radio set to require an output tone from the repeater to stay away from the RFI issue and having my squelch opened up and my eardrums blasted when I drive by certain organizations with really unhappy or unpleasant transmitters. NCARC has been encouraging people not to set the output tone. Yes, well, we've been screwing around with repeaters and dragging pipes and trying to resolve that problem, yes. In general, my opinion is I always want to set my radios to require output tones if the repeaters generate them.
GES.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, Mark, those were good points, and I still have to reset my radio. I would probably benefit from that, and I haven't done it yet. And I think probably the main reason NCARC has sort of encouraged non-use of receive tone is just to simplify things in this area. Actually, I don't know that they've encouraged it so much in general, but especially for the Baofengs, especially when we were using dual tones, one for receive and a different one for transmit. There are still people that are doing that on certain other repeaters. And unfortunately, I think there are still radios around which will not do dual tone. So, for example, TS-2000 owners, you're kind of stuck. You can either use tone squelch with the same tone or transmit tone with open squelch, but you can't do dual tone on that radio. But if you're using, if your radio supports it, or if you're using the same tone both directions, it's always, it's probably very beneficial for your noise level to use a receive tone squelch, but it is certainly up to you which way you want to go.
Well, the background on that, Kevin, was that originally when we did that, when we went back, like this goes back 5 years ago, we told everybody to shut it off primarily because we didn't want to show them, we didn't want to go through the, we had a bunch of rookies there, and we just thought it was easier to turn it off than it was to actually do it. And we really didn't have a good reason to not turn it off at that time. There was no digital at the time, which was in the area or anything like that, that we thought would obstruct with it. So it was just simpler to turn it off and tell people that than it was to do that. So there's no fault there. But there is an advantage of turning it on. But at that time, it was just simpler to tell everybody not to.
Yeah, Ben, that makes perfect sense because, you know, making things simple is always a good thing. But there are reasons for doing the other, and you can always bat back and forth, what's the best thing to do? Well, you know, it still comes down to personal choice, but when you have a repeater that requires certain things, you certainly do have to give it what it needs, and then if you choose to receive one way or the other, as long as you know what the repeater is sending, you can set your radio accordingly within its capabilities, certainly.
N0WIQ with a comment.
N0WIQ, I thought you left us. Go right ahead, Kerry.
I'm actually portable and walking too. But on the other hand, radios like the Pulbang that is completely menu programmable, it's easier if you have a computer program that will talk to the radio and set such things is easier to do. But that was my comment.
You know, you're absolutely right. Even the 857 compared to the 900 or some of the other base radios, if it's menu-driven and you've got somebody that's brand new, you just want to say, shut it off and we'll work through that, and then eventually you can turn it on. So you're absolutely right. When they're menu-driven, especially like the Bofang, that adds almost zero out of the factory support, and their manual was written by someone who really didn't understand English all that well. So therefore, you're trying to translate what he's trying to say. So absolutely, totally understand. You're absolutely correct.
That's why you get on here and ask questions, and you get somebody that's done it before and who can help you with those things, because there are people around that have done it and probably can explain it a whole lot easier than understanding the manual. However, reading the manual is always a good thing to do, too, but then definitely ask questions beyond that, because there are definitely going to be things in probably any manual that you won't quite understand, even if you've read it. So, do both, N7GES.
Before we go on, and I've got a couple more things here, I want to mention, we talk about support. We are always here on Monday nights again at 7 o'clock. However, it's not a bad idea if you go to the Yahoo groups. In fact, it's amazing what you can find. You go to the Yahoo site and go to groups, and you can find somebody, find a group that's basically for the 857. They've even got them for the Bofang. They've got them for the 8800. They got them for the Kenwood 71. I know I've joined every one of them. And you can ask them a question, and 90% of the time you'll get a fairly good answer for it. And I'm saying 90% because nothing's 100. But you can check that out. I'm not trying to say you shouldn't come here on Monday night, because I really want everybody to come back on Monday nights. But it is another option that you can find out a lot of different things from those areas.
K1COL, the comment.
K1COL, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of throw out there that with the Bofang or the Bofang, I have one of those radios, and I do have the software, and I did work through all the completely confusing manual and got through all that, finally. I also have some Wotion software as well. I had one question about the repeaters, is what type of power supply are they running off of, and do they have any kind of a solar or battery backup system?
In WIQ.
Go ahead, Kerry, but we are changing that, so go ahead.
Well, the repeater either doesn't have or does have in process a backup system for powering the repeater. So that's my comment. And if James is still around or has come back, he can clarify that.
KI0KN, James, are you in there?
N7GES.
Yes.
I know that we're adding battery backup right now, so it's a system that will charge and keep charged and regulate the battery carefully while there is power, and when the power is interrupted, it will provide the repeater with power that's, you know, uninterrupted, so that communications will maintain. And I believe there are plans to work on, at least at the Horsetooth site, perhaps work on a generator that will help that situation for longer-term power outages. But the batteries are certainly supposed to perform well for short-term power outages. I don't know exactly what the time length of time we're expecting to get right now. I don't have the emails in front of me to look that up. But at least for short-term power interruptions, you know, of a few hours, the repeater is certainly supposed to be able to stay operating. N7GEF.
Yeah.
NWIQ.
Hang on, Kerry. Maybe I can answer that because I actually just purchased that stuff. We had a proposal that was gone through from the last board or club meeting, and they proposed batteries. We bought basic chargers that run off 110, and they're one of these chargers that are smart chargers. Therefore, we can leave them on. We bought four of those units, one for Buckhorn, one for Horsetooth, one for CSU, and also a backup, okay, because we got a pretty good deal on that. I'll let this drop for a minute. Friday, I purchased two battery systems, one's to go to Horsetooth, the other one to go to Buckhorn, and they were supposed to be installed, I think, on Sunday, and I'm not sure that he got around to doing that. But at Horsetooth, we also have a generator up there, a propane generator. It's a big V8 deal that needs some work, okay, that I'm hoping to get up there any time to be able to fix that myself. So we've got different types of backup. We do not have solar anywhere that I'm aware of, okay. We do at Budweiser have somewhat of their service that is not a problem, and also the same thing. I don't think we really have anything at UNC either at that point. But we do have their service, and they have backup services also. So we have got backup systems on pretty much everything that we're going to do, except we don't have the generator working at Horsetooth, but it does have a backup battery system, which could run for as much as, I think, 8 to 10 hours. I'm not real sure. But it would provide us enough services to be able to handle that.
W2MIC.
N0WIQ, go ahead.
I was going to say, finance is available to match the battery power for any amount of time you want to run the repeater on battery. But on the other hand, the propane power generator that you were talking about could take over if the batteries start getting low on battery operation.
Yeah, and that's at Horsetooth. That's actually part of the building. That's not ours, but it actually is wired into our power structure. So it's something that we could run on for as long as they've got propane, I guess. And I have not been to Horsetooth. That's the one area I haven't been to, so I haven't seen this thing. But I do know a way to fix it. All it needs is a radiator hose, and we'll get up there and get that thing done. So, we just approved that money last time, and that should be put in within, if it's not put in already, it should be done with the next month for sure.
Oh, I might say that in this area, losing power for more than one day is a little bit rare. But on the other hand, maybe you want to make things work for a little longer than that.
K1CO, comment?
I can wait my turn.
It's your turn. Go ahead.
An additional technical detail, since I'm both a ham radio enthusiast and an electrical engineer, the whiz-bang charge controllers power supplies that the club authorized and Joe has been busily writing checks for has a really interesting feature that not only do they have a very clever smart charger, but they can manage and charge two different banks of batteries. This, I think, is huge because one of the problems you have with a battery backup system is, for whatever reason, the battery fails. And the systems that we have purchased have the ability to have two totally separate banks of batteries, both of which can be used to power the repeater. But should one bank fail, a cell goes bad, something like that, it is possible for the charge controller to switch over and run off the other bank rather than crashing out and taking down the repeater. I'm sure as time goes on, we will be monitoring how often we're power failing, how long power is out. But that's a really cool feature we have the ability to use, is put in two separate sets of batteries on each repeater. We can draw down both banks, but if one bank fails, the repeater does not go down.
1CO, you had a question?
Yeah, that's a great bonus to have, the dual battery capability. I do like that. My background is electrical also. I did like 20 years as an electrician, electrical contractor. So I'm very interested in this kind of stuff. I worked on quite a few battery backup plants at the Telcom Hotel downtown for a bunch of different internet stuff. So I understand battery backup. I really would throw my 2 cents in on definitely thinking about throwing some sort of solar maybe in there to give you that longer option above and beyond propane. The solar panels nowadays seem to, you know, really come down in price and be affordable. And I don't know how many amps you guys are pulling on these repeaters while they're in use, but I'm sure we can figure something out pretty economically to trickle charge those batteries and not ever have to worry about any propane. K1COL.
Solar might be an option, and it definitely is, but we have contracts with the two places that we're dealing with that we could do that with. I don't think we could do it on Budweiser. I'm pretty sure we couldn't do it on UNC. But Horsetooth, and we may not be able to just because of our contracts that we have with those people. So it would be something we should look at maybe. But as for now, I think we took the simplest issue and the way we could do it in-house and not have a big structure sitting outside, which we may be having a lot of problems with our lease and our contracts up there.
Hey, one, two. Yeah, I understand all that. I was just throwing my 2 cents in. I just, personally, I built a couple small little battery solar power plant stations, you know, portable things, and yeah, they're so simple to build, and the solar panels are so small nowadays that I just like having all that triple charge capability. Just my 2 cents. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it'd be a very good option if we could pull it off, and somewhat inexpensive to do it. I mean, and this and that, but it would be some negotiations we would have to do, and we knew we could do this right now. And we also knew that we could do it for in-house without any issues with our lease and things like that up there. So there's some politics we have to kind of play when we're dealing with these people, because they are giving us their place for nothing. And up in these sites, we're not the only one up there. There's a lot of other people up there. If you go to Buckhorn, shoot, there's more antennas up there than they have down in Channel 9 News. I mean, there's something else up there. We're not the only ones up there, so we have to kind of be very careful on how we do things. But I do appreciate your input. That's a great idea, and we might just as soon pursue that as anything else. Does anybody else have any questions or comments for the net?
In zero WIQ.
N0WIQ, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, for efficiency's sake, we usually use a switching charge system to charge a battery with a solar system. So that generates some noise that has to be taken care of within the repeater system.
Well, that was the beauty of the charger that we have now. It's fairly, it could do a lot of different things. We got a very, very good deal, almost 50% off on these guys. So, I'm not sure. Of course, it's 110. I'm sure. I don't think it would handle any. It might be able to be converted into solar. I'm not that familiar with it. Any other questions or comments for the net?
Do we know about next week's topic yet?
I got an idea, but I'm not really sure I want to do it. Well, I'd like to do it on batteries.
That's probably what we're going to do. That was my thought when we started talking about it. Of course, we explained a lot of it, but maybe there's more in detail.
Oh, there's a whole lot more detail.
Yeah, I think that could be an interesting topic. N7GES.
This is KD0TYU, net control this evening's Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Cup sponsored TechNet. Is there any other questions or comments for the net? Okay, we're going to wrap it up then. We had about 23 check-ins, and that lasted 82 minutes. I appreciate everybody coming in, and like I say, I'll post this up and send it out to the members list. But I do think our next subject will be batteries. And what we're looking for is batteries that you can use for all kinds of different things, primarily in the radio-related type of events. So if there's no other questions, I appreciate everybody joining in, and we'll see you next Monday night at 7 o'clock. One other thing I want to mention, I want to drop. This is somewhat off the topic, but we do have our library up and running. If you care to take a look, go on the website under Resources, and you'll see an area that basically says Library. Go in there and find out what books we got. And like I said, there's no charge for these things. If you're interested in that, you just have to contact me, and we even would deliver. So if that's if you're looking for a book that you'd like to kind of thumb through, please give us a holler. And with that, everybody have a pleasant evening, and the repeater's open for general use.